Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with General John Handy, Commander, United States Transportation Command. And joining us in our conversation is Chuck Brough. General Handy, can you tell us about TRANSCOM's role in Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom and the challenges you faced during that?
That's a good question, too, Paul, and let me come back at you with a couple of data points. I tell folks quite routinely that even as I sit where I do as the commander of this great organization, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the things that we've been able to do as a team. And the team, of course, is TRANSCOM, and DLA, is, you know, Defense Logistics Agency, is a tremendous partner. The services, all the people who have to do with logistics, transportation, and distribution. But if you look at the numbers of sort of things we've done, think about what it takes to move over 2 million people to and from the continental United States halfway around the world. Think about what 5 million short tons of cargo really is. Think about 2.3 billion gallons of fuel. Now, as I rattle off those numbers, if you're like I am, it's almost impossible. You start thinking about how large a city is that? How do you do that? And so the responsibilities of TRANSCOM in support of Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom have been those kinds of numbers and everything it means. And I could go into the millions of meals and the millions and millions of bottles of water and ammunition and all the litany of supplies and equipment. Everything that's gone to that theater, we've moved with rare exception. And what that means to the warfighter is the fact that whatever it is you need, either combat power or medical supplies, there is an organization who has the responsibility to get it to you when you need it, whatever it takes. And so it's a combination of all our air capability, all of our sea lift and surface capabilities pulled together to provide the warfighter that kind of capability. And at the same time we're doing that, we haven't just focused on Iraq and Afghanistan. We've supported the BAM earthquake in Iran. We've supported the National Science Foundation in Antarctica for their exploration of Antarctica. We've supported all the other regional combatant commanders around the world. And so our business is not just the conflict focus, it's all over the world. And yet we've done the things that I described in those numbers. It's staggering. And it just goes on and on and on. And that's some sense of what this proud team of 156,000 plus people have been able to do in just barely 3 short years.
In addition to your primary mission, which you just described very concisely, last segment we talked about your role in the DPO transformation initiatives. How do you balance those two initiatives?
Well, one of the things I think is really important to understand is that right now with the conflict going on, and as busy as we are, the notion of process improvement is one that is an easy pill to swallow for everybody. I don't know anyone who's not looking for a better way to improve support to the warfighter. TRANSCOM is no different. Our components are no different. DLA is no different. We've all partnered to figure that out. And once you look at there is a conflict going on and a dramatic need to improve processes, you see what's happening within the logistics domain. And that is great innovation, great and wonderful process improvements, dramatic innovations in IT, information technology, for example. And it's all brought on not just by the conflict, but the speed with which we've been able to do it is enhanced by the fact that we are supporting people who are living or dying based upon, frankly, what we're able to do for them. And so that certainly is a huge motivator to do the things that we're doing. Many people ask, how on earth, in the middle of this incredible conflict, have you transformed the entirety of the headquarters at TRANSCOM and all three components? How have you done all this incredible innovation? It's because we need to. We're determined to do it. And this is no better time to do it than right now.
Very good. Can you talk more about the TRANSCOM's role in fielding the Deployment and Distribution Operations Center in CENTCOM?
Absolutely. Chuck, it's a great story. September, the SECDEF gave us a designation as a distribution process owner. In November, we decided we needed to plug that other end of the supply chain, which is we have TRANSCOM at the continental U.S. end of it, but it was open-ended at airports or seaports in the theater. There was no command and control node at that end. And so we developed the idea of a CENTCOM Deployment and Distribution Ops Center, CDDOC. I'm a military person, so DDOC. You'll hear us talking acronyms all the time. We deployed that DDOC to Kuwait, roughly 65 what I call PhDs in logistics. We pulled them from DLA, from Transcom, from services, from the entire national command partnership, and we put them in Kuwait after some training to build that team. And more importantly, we gave those professionals the information technology tools to do the job we expected. And we gave them the typical military tactics, techniques, and procedures that we wanted them to follow. And then we tied no other constraints to them. We gave them all the room to innovate. We challenged them to seek and destroy bad practices. And essentially, they were in theater by the 16th of January, 2004, and within days discovered dramatic things they could change. And the communication, if you can picture it in your minds, from the United States, where Transcom is, plugged into this command center in Kuwait with visibility of the Iraqi and Afghanistan areas of operations and their supply chain requirements, all that linked now with good high-vis IT and all the bandwidth to support us, it's no wonder that they were able to discover things that they could improve within the theater. I'll give you one small example. 1,700 containers of building supplies were destined for Iraq. And when I say containers, I mean the 23-footer, 40-footers that you see on flatbed tractor trailers going up and down I-95. 1,700 of them. Well, the DDOC quickly asked key people in the theater, someone ordered these supplies. Do we need them anymore? Well, the fact was that time had gone by. Contractors in the theater had locally purchased most of these supplies, and they were able to cancel that requirement. That's canceling the acquisition of 1,700 containers full. It's canceling the container leasing problem. It's the fact that they probably would have gone to the theater prior to the DDOC being there, and someone say, who ordered all of this stuff? No hands would go up, and we'd either have to ship it back or dispose of it locally or store it locally. That was a dramatic example of savings. We've also seen redeployments of units take place weeks ahead of their normal schedule because of the visibility into that shipping or airlift out of the theater. And the list goes on and on and on that we could spend quite a bit of time talking about just their successes. No strings tied around them. Innovation was the key, and empowerment was a solution set.
You've mentioned IT on several occasions throughout this interview. Recently, we've read a lot about sense and respond and radio frequency ID technologies. What role are those technologies playing in your transformation?
Let me talk about RFID, the radio frequency identification. First off, right now, from a technological perspective, the best tool that we see out in industry is RFID, active or passive. In other words, either transmitting itself or passive, you read it with a reader. Having the information about what's in a box on this tag or what's on a pallet on a tag or in a container on a tag, it doesn't matter, all the way up to shipload data or aircraft load data available on an RFID tag. That technology, coupled with our IT systems, means that with the proper use of RFID, as a pallet of cargo moves through an aerial port at Charleston, South Carolina, for example, that data is picked up and put into GTN. As it flies, we know it's on that airplane because we have systems that feed GTN about where that aircraft is. As it lands in theater, it's scanned again, either actively or passively, and that same data. What I'm describing for you, obviously, is a continuous knowledge within the supply chain of where an item is. So much so that within a container on a ship, we can even determine where an item is in the container on a ship, not just what it is, but where it is. And what that means in the theater is if a container arrives in the port, we don't have to open it and search it to find out what's in there. You can look on a computer and see that container number has these inventory items in it, and it's going to base X, Y, or Z. The contribution of RFID, once fully implemented in the entire defense transportation system, will empower us as logisticians and, more importantly, the warfighter to execute his tasks more efficiently and effectively in the future. And we're getting there really quick. Tie that with industry's innovations, and you see a supply chain that really has a bang for the buck for the warfighter. Now, I didn't talk about sense and respond, and I owe you that. The only reason I started with RFID first is it's real and alive today. Sense and respond is a goal that we have for the future that essentially describes the end game. If a U.S. industrial base can see consumption data in the theater and respond to that, either by knowledge from a weapon system using up a part or a soldier or sailor, airman, or marine using up whatever commodity they're using, and being able to respond to that requirement is where we want to be. Once you tie both ends together, we will be in a sense and respond mode, and we will get there.
It's very interesting. Transcom's story is one of large-scale change and transformation. What are the lessons learned for others who are integrating and streamlining? We'll ask General John Handy of Transcom for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.